Hey, good morning, everybody.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, a little early. Good morning, everyone. This is Steve Long. I'm the author of There's Somebody, and so pleased to be talking to you from the blustery Northwest today. This is our inaugural show, and we're going to be, over the next several weeks, talking about all things books. And it might be talking with authors. I've got some bookstore owners lined up, and I hope to even get an agent or two. I'd love to hear your suggestions. So if you have ideas for either a subject or a guest, you can contact me through my Facebook page, There's a Somebody, or the website is stephenwlong.com. Stephen is S-T-E-P-H-E-N. And I'm just absolutely thrilled to have as my very first guest, my friend and multi-talented guy, William Westwood Jr. Bill is an award-winning author. He's a sculptor. He's a painter. And I'm not sure, Bill, is there something that you can't do? Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you. Thank you. Can you see me, boss?
No, I can feel the heat.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's good. So, you know, we did have a little chat earlier, and I just, you don't know this, but I want to ask you a question that you may not be prepared for. I've told people the evolution of your book, how your book came to be, and I wonder now if I've made this up in my own head, if I've taken bits of the truth, or, you know, if I'm telling them the straight story. So tell me, how did your book, The Shimmering, come to be?
Well, okay. Yeah, the book is called The Shimmering, Tales of Tremora, and it's a young adult fantasy novel. And I was introduced, well, I read a lot whenever I was a kid. I was pretty introverted and escaped by reading from the earliest times I can remember. And I found The Hobbit early in my life, as well as the Chronicles of Narnia. And I just absolutely lived in Middle Earth and Narnia for probably from the time I was 9 or 10 years old. And even now, as a 65-year-old man, I reread those books occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found those books, loved them to death. And, in fact, I was the first person to order the books into the library down in Montclair way back in, probably 59 or 60.
So to get the story straight, that's Montclair, California,
yeah.
not New Jersey.
Right. Not Cher's neck of the woods, but Southern California. In fact, in those days, you had library cards, and I used to, you would have to sign the card and put your name on it and leave it with the library as you took the book. I would go back into the library after reading the books to see who also had read the book so I could go find someone that I could talk to them about C.S. Lewis and Tolkien. I've just been a huge fan all my life. And
sure.
Once I retired from Verizon, I spent a lot of years using the right side of my brain as an environmental consultant and manager, but I always had my art and my love of books with me. And when I retired, I decided to write a book that was similar to the books that I loved growing up. I had a Writer's Digest critique, actually, of my book, written where one of the comments was that it's my book smacked of C.S. Lewis and Tolkien. Well, I don't know if it was meant as a compliment. It certainly was
to
me.
I would think that you really couldn't do better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. So took 7 years to write that book, and I also illustrated the book and emulated the original illustrator for Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. Her name is Pauline Baynes, and I was a big fan of hers. I always have, and still am. Unfortunately, she's gone now. She died in her 80s. some years ago, but I did do pen and ink drawings for the book, similar to the type of drawings that Pauline Baynes did for The Chronicles of Narnia and The Hobbit.
Okay, so my story that I love, if the truth is different than what I've been telling people, that's too bad because I like my story. But okay. I thought that you were taking a sculpting class and wanted to sculpt a creature that didn't exist, and your teacher said, if you do that, then you have to write this creature's backstory so that you know it, so that you know where you're going. Is that even remotely the case?
Oh, sure. It kind of kick-started my the whole venture, and this has been adventure. I was in college as an adult in my 50s, studying computer animation, and the professor's project or my homework was to come up with a biped, draw it as a two-dimensional figure, and then sculpt it, and then put it into the computer. At that time, it was Softimage or 3D Studio Max. I'm not sure. That I had always had all of that fantasy in my head, and this was the opportunity. So for the professor, I drew Tracker and Woz, who are characters in my book, and took it to class and followed up with a sculpture and even animated a little bit in those programs. So you're right, and it did get me started. And then 7 years later, I ended up publishing the book because I did have to write a backstory for those characters for the class.
Okay. Yeah, that's, and so I wasn't that far off. Well,
no,
Bill, this is your first book. You and I, and in fact, I'll just come clean here and tell everybody, you are my primary motivation for going ahead and publishing my book. So thank you for that. And I've told you personally, but I just admire your drive. You just seem to not let anything get in your way. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah, you've been through this experience. I hope that there are folks listening who want to write or want to publish. What kind of be sure you do and be sure you don't kind of things would you advise?
Well, anybody who is aspiring should become something of a student of the process. There is the established process of going out, finding an agent, finding a publisher, sending query letters, going through the process. And it's very difficult. It always has been difficult, and it's a hard road. And you have to stay with it.
And I think it's getting harder, not to interrupt, but
I do too.
With the Internet
yeah.
and electronic submissions. I hope to get an agent on here. I'd love to talk to them about the real numbers. But I've
right.
heard things like
right.
400 submissions a week. You know, come on, how can you read that? So, all right.
I started the traditional route and wrote my queries, and I started acquiring and accumulating rejection notices, like so many authors do. But in today's world, there are other options, and it's gone beyond the print-on-demand, vanity press type stuff. You can actually self-publish a book, go through all the steps, and end up with a product. It's the advantage of that is you're going to have a book in your hands at some point, guaranteed. The disadvantage is all of the marketing, all of the exposure that book needs, it's going to be your responsibility, and it's something you can't ignore. So if I was going to suggest, not so much suggest, but let you know as an aspiring author, if you go into the self-publishing world, however you get there, through crowdsource funding or vanity press, print-on-demand, Kindle publishing, there's all types of ways to get that book out, but you really must pay attention to it. You must get into the marketing side. And you have to get out there and glad hand and sell your product.
Okay, but Bill, let me cut in just a minute. I think one of the changes over the last 20 years or so has been if you aren't a top-selling author, having gone a traditional route, in other words, you got an agent, Knopf is doing your book, you know what? You're going to have to do that promotion anyway. And so, I'm going to put in a plug for the route that I took. I was lucky enough to get hooked up with Rare Bird Lit. And so the way that I explain my route is hybrid publishing, which is, yes, I paid for the printing, but beyond that, I feel that this is a real traditional path in the sense that I have national distribution and I have somebody that knows what the heck they're doing. I have to do the work, but at least I have some guidance. So you're absolutely right that if you self-publish, you're going to have to do that, but chances are you're going to have to do it anyway.
Yes, I've heard that from authors who are even on the best-selling list, New York Times best-selling list, who are a little bit disconcerted with the direction this whole publishing world has gone, where they used to be able to write their books and let their agents and publishers do the work. That's no longer. No, they're being asked to not only do their book tours and their interviews, but pay for the way to do it. So it is. You're absolutely right. Regardless of the way you get there, you can't ignore the fact you're going to have to spend a lot of time marketing
right.
and selling that book yourself.
I was actually cautioned by a friend of mine who has been a successful nonfiction author, and I went the Kickstarter route and was very pleased with that. When I got the money and I had approached him for some advice, he said, "Are you sure you want to do this?" And what he meant was, "Are you sure you want to devote that large a portion of your life to promoting your book?" And for me, the answer was yes. It's a ball, but if you don't like doing it, then you might want to rethink that. You might want to get a job.
Right.
What's that?
I said, yes, you might want to rethink that.
Yeah. So I've told people, I've given various talks about crowdsource funding and writing and so on, and I've told people if you're writing for the money, if that's your primary motivation, you're really better off getting a job delivering pizzas. Because you'll spend a lot fewer hours and initially at least make a lot more money. So you better like the process and you better like just being in that milieu if you decide to spend that much time.
Mm-hmm.
So do's and don'ts, that's kind of a caution there. I want to add one of my own. If I'm reading a book now that I really like. It's clear that the fella is a real wordsmith. He's a really a good writer. But I think what I see is an editing problem. And you had your book edited. I had mine professionally edited. And I think that's so important. And you have to remember, once it's printed, that's what represents you. You don't want to put something out there that later on you're going to say, don't read page 28. There's too many mistakes there. So, and it's not just grammatical mistakes and spelling and so on. It's really the flow of the story. I would say get in a critique group or at least certainly have somebody that you is knowledgeable and that you trust. Have them read it and give you some honest feedback about pacing and character development and voice and that sort of thing. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you're absolutely right, and it was a lesson hard learned. Going into this, I did not, I had no experience, and there's things I will do on my second book that I couldn't do on the first, and that editing is one of them. I was asked to be the final eyes on my manuscript, which is just completely wrong. There's anyone who's aspiring and should pay the money to have it looked at by a professional. The last person on the planet that should be responsible for the final is the author. I spent 7 years with that book. I probably could stand and recite that book all 350 pages, word for word, if I was really,
yeah.
Because I'm reading by rote now, and I would overlook and did overlook the simplest of errors without seeing them. And
sure.
That's going to happen to all of us. And so you really do need that third eye or that third person input, that professional input, to get your manuscript where it should be. And you're right, you're judged. I actually was docked for the number of errors that were in my book that weren't found in a competition. And by the way, a short list of recommendations here for authors while we're talking about this is I recommend as soon as you get published to get that book into as many contests or award opportunities as possible that you can afford, because none of it's free. But if you can get into a competition, win a prize or an award, you have become an award-winning author. And
right.
I won a national award for the book with the Mom's Choice people. I won a Mom's Choice Award for family-friendly content for my book. I'm not into writing about The Walking Dead or vampires. There's no blood on the floor.
Right.
And
right.
In actual fact, my target
audience...
Well,
not human blood anyway, right? you do have some other creatures, but... Maybe a little ogre blood. A few. Yeah.
But the point is that putting that seal on the cover of the book has helped the book more than I know, more than I can say. It's a nice thing to have an award. There are several of them out there, just depending on your genre, and I would recommend doing that. I would also recommend highly. In fact, I think it's absolutely necessary to have a web page.
Sure.
To support your efforts and your book, a place for people to go and get updates from you. I wouldn't skip out on any of those. In addition, I would recommend a publicist, that professional that you mentioned earlier. Get your book published professionally, get it in its best format, and then let a publicist guide you or help you in arranging those book signings and radio talk shows and all the different things that can happen or needs to happen when you're marketing.
Sure. So you mentioned website. What's yours?
My website is williamwestwoodjr.com.
And
I have a lot of information, even some free downloads of the first couple chapters of the book. The illustrations are there, also samples of other things I do, sculpting and painting, but a lot of information on the book, and it's an instrument, a tool you have to have in your toolbox.
Yeah. And now, do you still have, I went on your website early on in its inception, and you could click on, I think, the upper right corner, and it would turn a page for a little bit. Does it still do that? I just thought that was a cool feature. It does,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I built a website with a friend, Wix. I used Wix.
Okay.
There's more than one of those website building sites, but I would recommend it. I have no problem with them at all. And once you have it in place, you just pay an annual fee, which is very reasonable, and keep it up to date.
Yeah. So I'm going to lead you a little bit here because I think I know where you're going.
Okay.
We talked about funding. I talked about Kickstarter. You talked about spending the money for both a publicist and an editor. What would you do different financially if you had this to do over again? Or when you have? I know you're working on the sequel to The Shimmering. So what would you do different?
Well, I think that... at this point, I feel pretty successful, at least in the efforts I've made. This week, I have the highest graphs on Amazon that I've ever had in all the categories as an author, ranked as an author, sales of the book, fantasy book in particular. There's categories that I seem to be doing better now than I have all along. I would, if there's anything I would do, I wouldn't have as many books printed as I did the first time around. Because
right.
at this stage, there's even a few little tweaks I would like to do with some of the characters that I may have, that I would maybe make clearer. In other words, I would have a second edition by now. If I had run or printed less books than I did. So the second time around, I will print less books so that when I come to the point those books are gone or I need more books, I can get into a second edition and have the opportunity to rework a few things or correct some errors or just have it as a second edition. Now, because I ran so many books, I can't experience that because I have books that I still have to sell.
Sure. Well, Bill, let me cut in just a minute. That reminds me of something that I guess I wanted to just to get out, that the publishing world is at least in transition, if not in chaos. So the new technology allows you to go back and get more books where in the traditional publishing it didn't. And so two things about that. One is there are traditionally published authors who are foregoing that route and pulling back and self-publishing on purpose because they have more control and they have more freedom. So that's one thing. The other thing that I'm thinking about is relative to a future guest, I contacted a friend of mine who is a L.A. Times best-selling author. I absolutely love her work. She's terrific. She writes wonderfully. She, at this point at least, has declined to be a guest because her books are out of print. And that's a travesty. These are good books.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, she has four in a series. In fact, she's sold the rights to the characters to a TV production company. So for heaven's sakes, if that isn't worthy of a reprint, I don't know what is. And yet, because
right.
I think she feels locked into this, you know, they're in control. They printed them. They're ran through the inventory. They're out of print. And now I think she's disheartened and feels like she's done. If you have more control, you're never in that situation.
Well, that's true. And in addition to that, although I found that I'm kind of a rare character here, but I actually did the book cover design and illustration, as well as illustrated the book and wrote the story myself. Even C.S. Lewis and Tolkien had no control over their illustrator or their book covers. That wasn't anything that they were even given an opportunity to. I read their story, and their Pauline Baynes only met those guys one time, and yet she's the person who illustrated the books. Well, I have control over many things, including that I would not have if I would have been published traditionally, which I find is a plus. I still wish that I would have published when I first tried with all those query letters and had the power of those big publishing houses and the distribution and the exposure. But as you mentioned way earlier in this conversation, maybe that's not such an advantage anymore.
Well, it's certainly a double-edged sword, and I'll tell you, my understanding, and anybody listening that knows better, please contact me, but my understanding is that the average number of books sold, and this is all books, is 900 copies. So when you look at and factor in John Grisham and Clancy and Stephen King and Koontz and so on, when you take those gigantic numbers, And away from the average, goodness, you know, it's like selling, a book of recipes from your grandma or something. You're just not going to sell a lot of books unless you've got something going for you.
That's true. That's true.
I'll tell you,
as a self-published author, initially the excitement is you have your friends and family and friends of friends. You have, to use the cliche, the low-hanging fruit. You have people who are going to support you and buy your book, and it's an exciting time. You sell the books wherever you go,
and you have book signings, and it's just all brand new. And but when it's all over, you've really still only sold a couple hundred books. If you want exposure and want to make, you need to do better than that. So then your book either has to take on a life of its own, but that's where your efforts to keep it alive are extremely important when it comes to supporting your book yourself, getting yourself out into the public and doing. But even at that, I've been at it for over 2 years, and I might have hit that number that you're talking about, but it's been an awful lot of work. It's taken over my life. And that's the reality. If you're doing it for the numbers of books to be sold, then you might, like you say, you might want to sell some pizza.
Yeah. So for you personally, is there a moment of regret? Do you ever wish you hadn't done this?
Well, no. You and I have discussed this. I have, Steve and I, for anyone that's interested, go back to, we grew up together in Montclair, California. Our parents were second parents. We live close to each other and we're friends. Well, recently, Steve and I went back to Montclair, had a book signing at the Montclair Library. At that book signing, there was, I don't remember, do you, Steve, maybe 30, 50, 60, I don't know how many people.
Yeah, I'm going to say 60 or 70.
Yeah, and they were people we might not have seen for decades, shaking hands and telling old stories. And the experience, just one small example of, you get into this publishing world, you're going to meet some wonderful people, other authors, you're going to be proud as hell of your accomplishment, it's going to change who you are, you're going to meet people that will do things for you that you can't even imagine. The doors that will open for you. And no, Steve, to answer your question, for those reasons, if no others,
right.
I haven't regretted a moment.
Well, same with me. This is something that I've looked forward to. Now, I have to say I've looked forward to this thinking that it was going to go differently. When I started writing and taking classes, I was lucky enough to be associated with an internationally best-selling author. I watched her success, and I just thought, well, isn't that cool? This is exactly what I'm going to do, and my path has been different. Nevertheless, I love it. It's been terrific. So we've been on the phone for a while. I want to remind everybody, your book is The Shimmering Tales of Tremora, and www.williamwestwoodjr.com. And it's a terrific website. It's just fun to go there and see all the what you do and kind of how you do it. My book is There's a Somebody, very different. It was highly influenced by Nick Hornby and the book High Fidelity, if folks are familiar with that. I think to some extent I didn't have success traditionally because it's classified, at least by some people, as a male confessional. And, you know, who wants to read about a guy that's a bum and then kind of gets away with it or gets off with less punishment than some women think he should? And I've had women tell me he should have suffered more. On the other hand, I've had women say, gee, that's really interesting. I never saw it from that perspective. So that's us. I hope, folks, that you make this a routine. Tune in Mondays at 10 Pacific time, and if you missed that, download it and listen later, and do contact Bill or myself. We'd just love to hear from you, love to hear your ideas, love to hear what your writing journey is, and I guess that's it. Bill, anything else?
No, Steve, thank you so much for the opportunity. First time I've been on radio, and I'm going live in the blush here for a while.
All right. Well, good to see you.
Okay,
give our
Steve,
love to Heather.
You.
All right. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Take care.
Goodbye.
Bye.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. Yes, it's the saddest experience you'll ever know. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. It's just no good anymore since you went away. Now I spend my time just making rhymes of yesterday. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do.